From the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Thursday, February 1st, 2024. I am the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
There he is, self. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things officially started with...
The Daily Denogram.
Yep, words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or nuggets, you get to make the call. A good one here from the Reverend Sherry Curry, who said, knowing what to say is not always necessary. Just the presence of a caring friend can make a world of difference. Aww. Yep. This is what the world needs today. A difference.
Gonads are useful for their purpose, but they are no substitute for brains.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of the program, shall we?
Twisted History.
Yep, this is it.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Big stuff.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
See? Well, alrighty, kids, it was on this day in 1896. La Boheme premiered in Turin at the Teatro Reggio, conducted by the young Arturo Toscanini. Mm-hmm. I'm only telling you this to impress you with my pronunciations. See? And it was on this day in 1996, the Communications Decency Act was passed by the U.S. Congress. Now, either it was repealed... or it's just not being enforced.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
With the presumption now that Donald Trump will be the GOP nominee, there's a lot of speculation regarding who he's going to pick for VP. And this is going to be a very, very important decision on his part. Because if he doesn't make the right choice, he could be shooting himself in the foot in regards to getting, let's say moderate voters, people who like to straddle the fence, people who can't make up their mind, the youth vote, that sort of thing. And among the people that are in consideration by the young voters, you would have to include Vivek Ramaswamy. No indications yet from Donald, other than the fact that he's in consideration. Is he on the hot list, though? Well, we don't know. This is all speculation. Now, with two significant and big victories under his belt, Trump's choice of VP is going to be a hot topic until he puts an end to it. The selection of a vice presidential candidate is not just about complementing the ticket, but also about securing a path to victory against Joe Biden. I mean, the fact that Joe Biden is even a serious contender just amazes me, because the man is obviously useless. He hasn't had an original idea in decades, if ever, really. He's probably one of the world's greatest plagiarists. And we all know what's going on here with Joe Biden. He's being run by Barack Obama. And his rather sizable legion of devotees. Let's not forget that. I mean, Obama's not doing this by himself. So I thought what we'd do today, since it's late in the week, let's have a little fun here and grab some audio from the other night with Greg Gutfeld.
When will Trump make a peep about his choice for Veep? As Donald sails toward the GOP nomination, there's growing speculation who could be his number two, which is very different than Biden's handlers discussing his number twos. That's too easy. As the New York Post reported over the weekend, Trump's team had reached out to RFK Jr. early on about serving as VP. They, quote, wouldn't write it off. Well, it certainly would prove true, the old saying, politics makes for strange bedfellows. Something I remembered whenever I woke up next to B. Arthur. R.I.P. But despite that report, a top Trump aide said it's 100% fake news. No one from the campaign ever approached RFK Jr. or ever will. And it would also require RFK to switch affiliation again, as he's already been a Democrat, an independent, and a member of Planet Fitness. So like Jerry Nadler's penis when he looks down... the VP choice remains to be seen. Sorry. I apologize. Of course, there are other candidates on the short list, like Vivek, who's been seen on campaign stops with Trump after dropping out of the race. But for all we know, though, Trump's actual choice for VP could be hiding in Vivek's hair. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, she's got the looks of Marie Osmond. And as a wartime leader, she kept the peace between South and North Dakota. There's also J.D. Vance, Tulsi Gabbard, Elise Stefanik. But who else could he pick? Are there any other out there that would be worth mentioning? How about Ted Nugent, huh?
Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah, Antifa definitely won't attack the White House. Abe Lincoln, even in his present condition, he'll run circles around Kamala. Barbie, she's got more brains in her head than Kamala and less plastic in her face than Pelosi. And, of course, Brian Kilmeade. That guarantees no one will ever want to take out Trump.
I guess I should have warned you there's adult material in there, but, you know, just mentioning Greg Gutfeld should be the warning all on its own. He's terrific. Anyhow, Trump's potential pick for vice president comes at a time now when the Republican Party is looking to consolidate its base while reaching out to independents and moderates. And the question then remains whether Trump's going to prioritize MAGA loyalty or maybe seek to broaden his appeal. Now, naturally, he's getting advice probably from several sources. So this decision, I'm sure he understands, is going to be pivotal in determining the direction of his campaign and potentially the outcome of the election. I mean, just because Trump has scored such terrific numbers in the nomination process doesn't mean that he's going to win the election. And again, I stand by my original thoughts. I don't think that Joe Biden is going to be the nominee come November. I just don't believe it. Now, is it going to be Michelle Obama? Yeah, I don't know. From what I understand, she really has no appetite to fill the role. But that doesn't mean anything. She could be coerced into running. But one name that's been emerging over and over again as a favorite is Elise Stefanik. And she's known mostly for her staunch support of Trump and, of course, her rise within the GOP ranks. Her performance during these high-profile House hearings on anti-Semitism on campus has really thrust her to prominence and notoriety. Her loyalty was further cemented when she referred to January 6th defendants as hostages, which they are, but at least she had the courage to say it. Showcased her commitment to Trump's narrative. And while her alignment with Trump's base is pretty clear, pretty obvious, there are concerns about her ability to attract the crucial independent and moderate voters needed to win a general election. What about the youth vote? Can she bag the youth vote? Yeah, I don't know. Even though she's fairly young herself, I don't think she's young enough to be considered part of the youth vote. Now, another contender who could bring diversity to the ticket, of course, is Tim Scott. You don't hear his name getting dropped, but he is in consideration. So, of course, you realize he was a presidential contender there for a while, but he endorsed Trump as soon as he gave that up, and he's appeared with Trump alongside him at rallies. So Scott's endorsement represents a strategic alliance that could very well help Trump chip away at Joe Biden's coalition. Because by considering minority and women candidates, Trump signals an understanding of the evolving political landscape and the need to appeal to a broader electorate. Now, Trump's administration, should he win, would benefit from a vice president who's not only aligned with his policies, but also capable and adept at engaging with the media and understanding the intricacies of Trump's world. Because as we all know, with this administration, Kamala Harris has been of absolutely no help whatsoever. So whoever Trump considers is going to have to be unflappable and ready to fight for the administration's agenda. and have to do so full time. So as the speculation continues, and it will, it's pretty clear that Trump's choice is going to have far-reaching implications for the GOP and the 2024 presidential race. The decision is certainly going to affect or reflect Trump's strategy for retaking the White House, and could either solidify his base or expand his reach to new voter demographics. Remember, one big, big thing that we have in our favor in getting Trump back into the White House is the current economy. Nobody is winning in this economy, except maybe the hedge fund people. So naturally, the anticipation builds as political observers are chomping at the bit, awaiting the announcement of who's going to join Trump in his quest to return to the Oval Office. And I personally wonder if Trump is just going to make us wait longer. Because you know what they say? If you want to really get attention, whisper. And if Trump wants to get additional attention, all he has to do is just kind of make people wait a little bit longer for his choice. New York State's government is considering a plan to loosen hiring qualifications for some 4,000 jobs so they can be filled by illegal aliens who already have federal work permits. Now, state agencies found 4,000 vacant positions in an effort to put illegal aliens into the state's workforce, according to a memo that was issued by the New York Department of Civil Service, which was approved earlier this month. Well, today's the 1st of February. Can't be much earlier than today. No, of course, they mean January. Anyhow, it should be noted here, before we poo-poo this idea, it should be noted that most of the jobs in question are these hard-to-recruit entry-level titles, you know, such as caring for people with mental and physical disabilities, building and ground maintenance, food service, auto repair, and office aid. And this, again, is according to the state memo that was reported by Bloomberg News. Now, in the memo, New York officials identified three barriers preventing illegal aliens from getting those state jobs. And they wrote, first, many migrants and asylum seekers are unable to verify their educational attainment, such as high school completion or equivalent education, which is required for some of these positions. Second, some have limited English proficiency. Lastly, even if they have successful experience performing the work to be done, it may be difficult for agencies to verify previous employment outside the United States. So to address these barriers, the Civil Service Department said that they were going to create positions in transitional titles with requirements more in line with the candidate's qualifications. In other words, illegal aliens would be hired into the same positions while, at least temporarily, having the usual qualifications such as English proficiency, proof of education, and previous employment waived for them. Now, does this invite problems? Probably. But is it that serious? I don't know. But the memo added, appointments to such positions would be temporary. During that time, these individuals would obtain the required credentials for the target titles. The creation of these transitional titles is a win-win way for the state and its agencies to connect qualified and motivated individuals with meaningful jobs and opportunity, help solve the migrant crisis, and rebuild the state workforce. Now, in all honesty, I don't see anything wrong with this. If you have these throngs of people pouring across the border, being able to find employment for some of them, particularly in jobs nobody wants, then, well, so much the better. But last December, the New York Department of Labor said that they identified some 39,456 private sector jobs open to illegal aliens, but they don't know how many illegal aliens have been hired. Do you notice I'm using the word alien? Yeah. Okay, they're migrants. I suppose we could refer to them as migrants if you want me to be a little more politically correct. But anyhow, they're illegal. And as part of an effort to move tens of thousands of illegals out of the government's care and into independent living, the Labor Department was tasked in late August to study the type and number of job openings that could be filled by those with legal work status. Again, I find this hard to disagree with. I think this may make sense. But if you're going to do this sort of thing, you got to keep an eye on them. But then again, and pardon me for being positive about something, but I would think that the kind of illegal migrant who's going to seek out one of these jobs is probably a pretty down-to-earth, good person all around, don't you think? So, after this outreach by the state a few months ago, 4 months later, some 1,016 businesses across the state have responded to the Labor Department saying that they are willing to hire illegal aliens with legal working papers. So these businesses told the state the number of jobs they have available for those individuals, but aren't required to reserve the positions for them, nor should they be. So the state doesn't keep track of who's hired. All right. Bo Duffy, a spokesperson for the Labor Department, said in a statement to an outfit called Spectrum News that the state doesn't keep track of who's hired. He says there's no requirement for employers or asylum seekers to report back to us if they've hired an asylum seeker or become employed. Maybe they should, but it's just more paperwork, and gee whiz, who needs that? But I don't know. You have to do something with these people. You just can't leave them at the curb. Now, naturally, my suggestion is deport them. My God, they've come across in obscene numbers. The flow has been uncontrolled, completely uncontrolled. That's why Mayorkas right now is the target of an impeachment move. That's going on right now in the House. And will he be impeached? Who knows? He's a Democrat. He's got that going for him. Democrats are never held to account. But there are all kinds of little nuances here with this move by the state of New York. And, you know, nothing earth-shaking. But I think this is probably a somewhat positive move. Lo and behold, Donald Trump has been nominated for a very prestigious award. Representative Claudia Tenney nominated him for the Nobel Peace Prize, citing his Abraham Accords Treaty. Isn't that funny? How he crafted that and kept peace in the Middle East during his tenure as president. And all Barack Obama had to do was to get elected and stay in the White House for 3 months. Wow. What a double-tiered system we have in this world in how we regard our people. Well, here's the way Fox News reported it. They said just days after three American soldiers were killed by Iranian proxies, Representative Claudia Tenney, Republican in New York, nominated former President Trump for a Nobel Peace Prize, citing his historic Abraham Accords Treaty. Donald Trump was instrumental in facilitating the first new peace agreements in the Middle East in almost 30 years. For decades, bureaucrats, foreign policy professionals, and international organizations insisted that additional Middle East peace agreements were impossible without a resolution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. President Trump proved that to be false. There you go. That's how she placed it. Now, the Nobel Peace Prize acknowledged the peace accord between Israel and Egypt in 1978, as well as the Oslo Accords in 1994. But there's been no recognition for Trump's role in brokering an agreement between Israel and four of its Arab neighbors aimed at normalizing diplomatic and economic relations between the nations. Ms. Tenney made that very clear. And she also said, the valiant efforts by President Trump in creating the Abraham Accords were unprecedented and continue to go unrecognized by the Nobel Peace Prize Committee, underscoring the need for his nomination today. Now more than ever, when Joe Biden's weak leadership on the international stage is threatening our country's safety and security, we must recognize Trump for his strong leadership and his efforts to achieve world peace. I'm honored to nominate former President Donald Trump today, and I'm eager for him to receive the recognition he deserves. Now, I don't know if you knew this, because if you rely on the mainstream media for your news, you're never going to hear stuff like this, but he has been nominated three previous times. And here's how Newsweek reported it. Trump has been nominated for the prestigious Nobel Peace Prize three times in the past. In September 2020, Christian Tybring Gjedde, a member of the Norwegian Parliament, nominated Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize for his groundbreaking cooperation in helping sign the Abraham Accord. 1 month later, Laura Huhtasaari, a Finnish member of the European Parliament, and a member of the right-wing Finns party, also nominated Trump for the 2021 prize in recognition of his endeavors to end the era of endless wars, construct peace by encouraging conflicting parties for dialogue and negotiations, as well as underpin internal cohesion and stability of his country. Trump received a third nomination from a group of Australian lawmakers in September 2020 for his promotion of peace in the Middle East. Well, what do you know? At least Newsweek was willing to report that. I am impressed. I like the way Tucker Carlson put it. He said, make no mistake, you are the carbon they want to reduce. Don't lie to yourself. There was an onstage discussion a few days back, I think it was last weekend, with Jordan Peterson, where Carlson raised an important point with respect to the overpopulation debate. Yes, I mean, if it's not climate change or global warming or forthcoming pandemics, then of course it's overpopulation. And whenever there's an infestation such as mice or roaches, well, the solution is to eliminate them. And you are the roaches. You are the mice. Understand this. I'm going to roll some audio. First, you're going to hear Jordan Peterson. And what he's referring to when you start hearing his voice here is the actual stance of the WEF. And then Tucker Carlson chimes in. And you tell me that you don't believe what they have to say here.
Quite frankly, there's too many people on the planet. And every time I hear that, I think, just exactly what spirit is saying that? And just precisely who the hell do you think should go? And just exactly how?
What spirit animates them? Well, if you believe people are the problem, then that is, of course, a genocidal spirit. If I believe that the problem with my kitchen is it has too many mice, the solution is to kill the mice. Too many roaches, I kill the roaches. They're the problem. They're the impediment. And so make no mistake, and this sort of tracks with what I was saying earlier, don't lie to yourself about the agenda. If people are the problem and you're a person, then your life is in the way of whatever goals they're seeking to achieve. By definition, am I missing something? No, I'm not. But all of us, it's so grotesque because, to further elaborate in one sentence, it's a demonic spirit, just to be clear. Any spirit that seeks to hurt, kill, divide, demoralize other people is a demonic spirit by definition. So that's what animates it. You're the target, and don't lie to yourself.
So if that isn't creepy enough, I want you to think now about the rumblings that we're hearing these days about a forthcoming pandemic. What is that all about? Well, here's what Tucker Carlson had to say regarding this term public safety.
Well, it's really about public safety. Every time I turn on your freaking television shows, everything's about public safety, which is a euphemism for hard-edged fascism, actually. And frankly, I'm a little bit more comfortable with the old-fashioned variety, where guys in tight uniforms goose-step through your town, because at least you know who you're fighting. And you know what it's going to take to liberate your town. Get rid of these people and everything will be okay. But when they show up and they're therapists with advanced degrees and they look at you in the face and say, no, actually, little Dylan just needs more fentanyl. Little Dylan's actually a girl. And we're going to, yes, he's a girl. Sorry, she's a girl. She's a girl. And if you don't agree, well, maybe we may have to remove Dylan to more care-affirming custody. Oh, you're going to take my kids away because I don't want to castrate them. They'll never say that, of course, because clear language is their enemy, because clear language exposes who they really are. They're not people who are trying to help you. They are people who are trying to hurt you. Anyone who goes after your children, anyone who encourages you to have fewer children, is trying to make you extinct. It's literally that simple. And it's only in the advanced West that we don't see that. Try that crap in Bulgaria. Try that in Serbia. How do you think that would fly in Serbia? We're just gonna give little Voldok some fentanyl. And we think, you know, he may be, you wouldn't even get to the next sentence before you got shot. Because you're trying to kill someone's kids.
Right.
And your average Serb, whatever you think of them, doesn't have generations of therapy talk that acts as a logical intermediary in his brain and prevents him from seeing what's actually going on here. They're trying to kill my kids. I'm the father. I won't allow it. I'll lay my life down to prevent it.
There you go. And you know, thank God for people like Jordan Peterson and Tucker Carlson who are willing to, I don't think this is a stretch when I say put their lives on the line to tell some truth. It's like the old saying, the truth shall set you free. But the disclaimer on that is, but first it's going to piss you off. And when it comes to that, so what? So it makes you angry. Maybe that's a good thing, because anger is a survival tool, just like hatred. You know, people say, oh, you shouldn't hate, you shouldn't hate. Well, you probably should hate your enemy. You probably should hate the person or persons who are trying to wipe you out. That is a survival tool. And a survival tool like that starts with truth. Let's wrap things up with the Comedy Corner and Colin Moulton.
Right, did you grow up poor? Anybody grow up poor? Chickens in the yard? We had chickens. We weren't even that poor. We were poorer than that. We had chicken. We had one chicken. You're either having eggs or chicken, but you're not having both when you have one chicken. That's a logistical issue. And everything we had was used. If you're poor, you go to Goodwill and garage sales, and I never even knew board games had instructions. Did you know that? They had instructions before we got them and had to look at the pieces that were left over and figure it out. Family rules, that's what they called it, family rules. And every family had different rules. Don't bring your rules to the sleepover, they don't apply. Hey man, you wanna play Monopoly? Yeah, let's play Monopoly. All right, cool, take your pants off. Everybody pants off for playing Monopoly. Family rules, man. Get the axe and the boiling water, let's do it. You ever read the instructions to a board game? It's not even close to how you've been playing it your whole life. I was like, this isn't a drinking game at all, Mom, you liar. My mother enjoyed wine till she got busted by her doctors. I am in charge of my mother's health care, so I sent her to the doctor complaining of vertigo. And she went to the doctor complaining of vertigo after drinking a box of wine. And the doctor was like, ma'am, dizziness is also a symptom of drinking a lot of wine. Have you had alcohol today? Your teeth are purple. It's her 83-year-old answer to that question. No, I've had wine. Because when you're an 83-year-old lady, wine is no longer alcohol. It's a blood thinner. She read an article about resveratrol, and now I'm the idiot. She taught us everything wrong. Did your parents screw up expressions? My mother used to just make up expressions, and we didn't know that till later. When we were adults, we would quote her and look like idiots. And sometimes the early worm eats birds in the sunshine when there's haystacks to be made, so that's how you lose needles. You all right, man? Where'd you grow up? That's what my mom said. My favorite was she'd say, it's like I tell you something that just goes in one ear. That's it. Never knew there was more to that till I was 30. All those expressions are weird anyway. If you ever use an expression, wonder where it came from originally. Like, how could that have meant what we're really saying? I have a buddy, whenever he sees a big scary guy with like cauliflower ear and stuff, he goes, man, I wouldn't want to meet that guy in a dark alley. I'm like, oh yeah, dark alleys? That's where you're gonna draw the line on that animal? I wouldn't want to meet him anywhere. If he could beat me up in a dark alley, I'm pretty sure he could pull it off in broad daylight. He's not getting distracted by dandelions in a sunlit prairie. He's knocking me out. You know who I wouldn't want to meet in a dark alley? A little person with night vision. That'd be terrifying. That's who rules the dark alleys. Google it.
Get on out there and have a terrific Thursday. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.